Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
This is a Transfer Talk, and it's a segment that I've come to greatly look forward to because I find that certainly I learn some very, very interesting information, things I should know, and but maybe just simply haven't thought of. Transfer Talk, Taryn Harris, partner and co-founder of Harris Marcus Mutlangu Attorneys. And today we are talking about what happens when you get married and divorced. We would love your questions, and I'll tell you why. Not only do we want your questions, and do we want you to be able to guide you in this area, but it also gives us an indication about some of the things that are important to you in understanding property, transfer of property. So the more questions you ask, even perhaps if it's not related to the topic that we're talking about, it means that when we discuss, when we sit down with Taryn and we work out some of the conversations that we want to have in the future, we know that there's an area that people are wondering about or people are feeling a little bit less assured about. And that'll guide us to be able to help you and all of us in this space as much as possible. So I really would love your questions. I'd love your feedback. What are the types of things that you would love us to cover? Taryn, a very good morning and welcome.
Thank you. Very exciting morning.
Yes, I see. You are dressed in your kit.
I am.
Not
I
your
am
legal
indeed.
Kit, in your soccer kit.
I am indeed. It's an exciting day.
Okay. And you know what? You said something to me during the song, which I actually didn't appreciate celebrating enough. And that is that my fun is actually there.
16 years. We're here again.
Yeah.
So I think you just have to appreciate it. And in sport, anything can happen. So let's have some faith.
Taryn, I'm writing your name right here for your prediction for tonight.
I'm going to be conservative and say 1-1.
Okay. That's exactly what I said. Okay. All right. So there we go. We want your predictions. 061-895-1019. What is tonight's result going to be? Let's talk about property ownership and the issues around property ownership with regard to marriage. And I guess, Taryn, the place to start is to just look at the very broad areas of how people get married in South Africa and how that impacts property, right?
You took the words right out of my mouth. So let's start at the beginning.
Mm.
So when people decide to get married, there's two basic regimes, married in community of property and married out of community of property. Married out obviously can be done with accrual or without accrual, but from a property perspective, there's really two to really focus on.
It's either you're in community of property or you're out of
that. So what does that mean, Howard?
Yes.
In community of property means the two people are treated as one. So it's one estate. So you're liable for each other's debts and liabilities. When you purchase a property, you're treated as one unit.
A unit, right.
When you're married out of community of property, you're treated separately as each person individually still has their own estate. I personally would not recommend getting married in community of property because it has a huge amount of ramifications, which is a whole show together, another show.
Yes.
But there's a third way that people get married that a lot of people don't think about, and that is when people choose to get married when they live overseas.
Ah, of course.
So this is marriage according to the laws of another country. And I'm not talking about a destination marriage where you choose to go to Mauritius to get married.
Because there you'll still probably get married with a register, you know, here.
So if you get married in a destination wedding, you're considered to be married wherever the husband is domiciled. So if you're still living, working, residing in South Africa, but you choose to go to
Mauritius
or New York or LA to get married, you're still considered to be governed by the laws of South Africa.
Okay. Interesting that.
If you live overseas and you get married overseas, and that is where you live, you're married according to the laws of that country.
Right.
Okay. Important, if you choose to get married out of community of property, you have to sign your antenuptial contract before you get married. That's why it's anti-nuptial.
I actually was sitting with an advocate recently, and she was ranting about this because she got a call from somebody just a few hours before they were to get married saying, oh, we haven't done an anti-nuptial contract. Can we just do it tomorrow? And she said, no.
Yes, you need a notary public.
Yes.
It's a story. I mean, I remember once I was I had a young couple who were going to Cape Town, and I literally was signing their ANC on a bonnet of a car before they went to the airport. It was...
Okay, so there's a lesson. There's a lesson, nothing to do with transfer of property, everything to do with smart decisions, and ultimately even transfer of property, because it's going to make a mess. So...
Okay, so now you've got married and you decide to purchase a property, or you're in the process of getting married and you decide to purchase a property.
Mm-hmm.
Most people don't know, as important it is to have your name, your full name in the deed, and your ID number, you also need to state your marital status. So if you get married after you've signed an offer to purchase and before the property's registered, it has huge consequences to the transfer process because everything has to follow how you are married. So if you choose to get married, let's say 2 weeks before your property is registering, all the documents have to change.
That's very important information.
Correct.
I'm sure it's fairly common because a couple's, they get engaged, or they decide they're going to buy a property, and this changes then before. Oh, very, very interesting.
Divorce is the same.
Mm.
If you are buying a property because you are getting divorced and the divorce goes through before the property,
right,
you're also going to have big problems
mm.
because it changes your marital regime. It changes your status. So your marital status is as important as your ID number and your name in the realm
right.
of property.
Okay.
Okay.
So you would state that. Do you have to show your ANC, your anti-nuptial contract, or you just need to state what it is?
So your conveyancer, when you sign your affidavits when you're purchasing a property, mm-hmm. will need certified copies to see that you are. They'll need to see the original to make certified copies to see that you are in fact married with an ANC. If you are married and then you later sell your property, but you were divorced subsequently, so if that makes sense. Mm, you were married when you bought your property, now you're divorced and you're selling your property. You have to lodge at the deeds office the divorce order and settlement agreement. So a lot of people hold their property for years after the divorce, and suddenly now they're selling their property, and they have to find their divorce order and settlement agreement from 10, 15 years ago. So it's very important to have that because it has to be, the original has to be certified by a notary, conveyancer, or you need a court stamped copy. So it's very important to have your divorce order settlement agreement. We can have a clerk go to the court to find it.
Yeah.
But if they can't find it, if it's lost in the court file and you don't have an original, it has to be reconstructed and the parties have to sign it again. So it's mandatory that it gets lodged in the deeds office.
Right.
So it's quite an important item to note. If you get divorced according to the laws of another country, now we're getting quite technical.
Yes.
The divorce order has to be in that country authenticated for use in South Africa. So it has to follow High Court Rule 63, which means it either will have to be apostilled by a notary to be used in the deeds office or follow whatever authentication of documents procedure is relevant for that particular country that they got divorced in, because that would also have to be lodged in the deeds office. So it's very important when you're buying or selling property that you have your affairs in order at the time when you are speaking with your conveyancer or your agent about this, because you're going to need these documents down the line.
What would your advice be? Somebody's married out of community of property. They are buying a property. It used to certainly be very common if it was a more of a traditional type of marriage. Maybe the wife is at home raising the kids, husband is working, maybe he's in business. Often it was the home was put into the wife's name, but he would be paying the bond because he was working. That was the older way that people would do it. What do you recommend today? I mean, those marriages, I think, are less and less common just simply because it's unaffordable. But what would you advise a young couple today buying a property?
If they're in a similar financial situation, I'd recommend if they're putting it in their own name, I would put it in both their names, assuming they're married out of community of property.
Yes, I think we have to assume that.
Yeah. Also, they get each would get a capital gains tax exemption on their primary residence individually.
Okay.
So you're not lumped together. Mm. You each get a capital gains tax exemption in your own name. But it's also important to note, Howard, that buying a property, depending on each individual's financial situation, is going to be particularly relevant on how you structure it. So if, for example, you have someone in business that runs their own business and they don't want maybe their assets to be in their own name, maybe they do want to put it in their wife's name, or they want to put it into a business or a trust, there's all different tax complications that you have to think about, but it could be beneficial to do it that way. What is important to note of something that you mentioned is the banks are very slow to grant a bond in favor of one person's name when the other person's name's on the deed and not on the bond.
That's interesting.
And the reason being is, imagine they can't pay their bond and the bank now has to sell this property in execution. So if they have to sell the property because you're not paying
property
the bond,
that somebody else owns to cover a debt that somebody that the non-client has.
So that's why they'll want both parties to be on the deed and both parties to be on the bond.
Right. Would you, as a conveyance, as somebody that really lives and breathes this segment at this critical segment, and as we've spoken about before, property is very often one of people's largest assets that during their lifetime. Before buying, is it prudent to come and speak to somebody like yourselves and say, right, we're looking at buying a property. Give us, what advice should we, can you give us, what would you say given our personal circumstances? Because everybody, as you've said, somebody might be in business, somebody might be in corporate, the couples might be same financial system. There's so many variables here.
Absolutely. And just to go back to the marital regimes, as well as married according to another country, it depends on who's signing the document. So if you're married according to the laws of another country and you're selling,
yes.
You need both parties to sign the documents, even if the one still lives in Spain or Israel, because you have to be assisted by your spouse. The deeds office doesn't know how you're married, so you would need both parties to sign. Similarly, if you're married in, one party can't sign on behalf of another. So you need to think about all of these things when you're buying the property on how to structure it in the first place.
Yeah, and selling a property as well. I see Mike saying, is not always beneficial to give sole agency? Please comment. I mean, we haven't really been speaking about that aspect of it, but I mean, you obviously deal with estate agents all the time because that's part of that's part of your business. Is this something you could answer?
Yes. Or? So I would disagree with this.
Okay.
I would say that to give someone sole agency is much better than giving a dual mandate. And the reason being is you've got an agent who is going out for your back, who's taking all the pictures, who's spending their time marketing your property. They're not going to fight then for the best price on that property. They're fighting against another agency. So each agent wants to sell the property so they can get the commission.
Sure.
They're not necessarily looking for the best price for the
property.
They just
want the deal.
If you give someone a sole agency or a sole mandate, they're going to compete with all the sellers to get you the highest price, not to try and beat out the competition.
Because the challenge is the price and not just the sale.
And also because now everybody is using online marketing and Property 24 and various other mediums to sell property, you can see the property listed. It's just a matter of which agency you want to use or who you've given it to. There are very good reasons to use one agent over another. But again, I think giving an agent sole mandate, they're going to work much harder than if you give them a dual or an open mandate. But this is a little bit off topic.
It is off topic,
but it's a good question
to
answer.
It is so interesting, but it also talks to, again, in my, it talks to the fact that we need to get the advice and guidance of professionals, because you walk this walk every single day. Most people buy a property once every couple of years at best. So get the right advice. What advice would you give to people in terms of the 5 points that you would want people to know with regard to property ownership and marriage?
So 5 points is obviously to have your affairs in order when you're buying a property. Mm-hmm. So think about how you're going to buy the property. Mm-hmm. Don't change your marital regime before you buy or after you buy when you're selling.
Right.
So from the time you sign the offer to the time you register and transfer the property, don't change your marital regime. Have all your documents in order to give to your conveyancer.
Yes.
If you're not going to be in the country to sign documents, make sure you give a power of attorney to someone to sign on your behalf.
So important that, yeah.
And I'm going to go back to, again, with marriage, if you're married in community of property, both spouses need to have that income tax number. And I know it ties into what I discussed last time,
but it's so vital. I'm sorry, I was meant to end it there, but I just need to ask you this question, just because I'm fascinated by it. How valuable is it to put a property rather in a trust or a company?
Sure. I think it depends who you ask. I think if you've got the parties owning their own businesses and they have risk, it's very good to put it into a trust.
So it protects your home.
But if you put it into a trust, you don't have the capital gains tax benefit and there's different tax consequences. So you'd need to get your accountant to advise you what's best, but it all comes down to risk. You might pay more tax, but it might be less risky to put it into a trust.
So again, talks to getting the correct advice. This has been Transfer Talk with Taryn Harris, partner and co-founder of Harris Marcus Mahlangu Attorneys.